Second and 10, Chiefs at the Bronco 20 on the right hash. Pressure, there is a flag thrown on the play. Late throw comes near side. Kelce at the 5, angling left. Touchdown, Kansas City. Kelce on the reception from Patrick Mahomes. Locked, feet staggered, left hash. Takes the snap at his left knee. Chiefs trying to get pressure. Pass is going to be intercepted this time. And the Honey Badger gets his second of the game. Tyrann Mathieu, his second pick. It'll end the game and his fifth of the season. You can't trick the Honey Badger late in the game, and the Kansas City Chiefs get the huge, big turnover to close the game again.
My echoes out to the Broncos. They came in and played a nice game. Vic had a great game plan for both sides of the ball and his special teams group. And, you know, he's great for this division, man. I mean, he's a heck of a football coach, and they just keep getting better and better. And that young quarterback of theirs, Locke, local kid, man, he keeps getting better. So it's great competition, and I'm glad we came out on top today.
Andy Reid on the win for the Chiefs last night with the Broncos, 22-16. We heard the call from Mitch Holthus, the touchdown pass, the only touchdown of the night for the Chiefs, Mahomes to Kelce. And then Tyrann Mathieu, the game-sealing interception, his second of the night, as the Chiefs do survive a bit of a scare and beat the Broncos 22-16 last night. The win gives Kansas City 11 straight victories against the Broncos, tying the longest win streak against Denver in franchise history. They won 11 straight against the Broncos back in 1964 to 1969. I have to admit, I'm watching the game and I wasn't concerned. I'm watching the whole game and I'm not concerned. I really wasn't. I mean, first of all, I know the Broncos can't score a lot of points. So I wasn't too concerned about that. I wasn't concerned the Broncos were running the ball pretty well because that doesn't seem to faze the Chiefs. And as long as Drew Locke is a quarterback of the Broncos, I felt pretty good about it. And I knew Locke would throw a pick or two, and he did. Boneheaded play early in the game. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he's trying to do. I don't know if he thinks he's Patrick Mahomes. That was not a good decision. I know he's young, 24-year-old quarterback, but those are bad decisions, and I've seen him do that all year long. That's why he has 12, 13 interceptions and just 7 or 8 touchdown passes. And then he throws a great touchdown pass to Tim Patrick, and it's like, now, you know, that's the potential of Drew Locke, but he has to make better decisions, and maybe he'll figure that out with time. But I never felt like the Chiefs were going to lose that game last night. I never felt like the Chiefs were going to lose that game. Did you?
No.
I never did. Never did. I mean, even when it was 1916, I'm like, you know, whatever. I just knew the Chiefs were going to win last night. And the Chiefs left, you could argue the Chiefs left 25 points on the field last night. 25 points. They scored 22, and that still was enough. They had an off night offensively, 3 of 10 on third down. They were 1 of 5 in the red zone, scoring touchdowns and 4 field goals. The Broncos did everything that they needed to do for the most part and still lost.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs didn't even come close to playing their A game last night. So more on that coming up in a moment. High school sports today, Dusty.
Yes, high school wrestling over the weekend. The Osborne Invitational was held. You can find the full results at ncksports.com. Smith Center took the team championship with 169.5 points. That was 40 points better than second place Ellis. Individually champions, they're Bentley Montgomery of Smith Center at 120, Jackson Pinckney at 126, Andrew Wilkinson at 132 pounds, Nathan Raby at 160, Jacob Kirchhoff at 182, Jake Sass at 220 pounds. We're all individual champions there. Again, you can find the full results at ncksports.com. Coming up here today, the Amos Morris basketball tournament begins in Russell, and St. John's Tipton will open out their basketball seasons. Coming up here this evening as St. John's Tipton girls play Russell at 6:30. The boys play at 8:15 tonight. That's what's going on in today's high school basketball. Again, all your favorite basketball team schedules can be found at ncksports.com. Still some postponements that are happening. Sylvan Lucas Southern Cloud, by the way, Tescott tournament game for today was postponed last week as well. So St. John's Tipton really the only immediate local team playing today, and many of them will be in action tomorrow. We'll go over that. And again, you can find the full schedule at ncksports.com.
Well, junior high video streams for Beloit junior high and basketball teams against Sacred Heart today. The girls at home, B&A games starting at 4:30, and then the CBA games for the boys of Beloit junior high at Sacred Heart. That's important to let people know because, of course, no fans are allowed. So if you want to watch those video streams, we have various folks from the Beloit Booster Club that are setting up all that equipment and running the video streams for you for junior high sports this season. So hope you enjoy that and spread the word. And if you don't know the link, visit ncksports.com. Cashel Appeals Board meeting was on Friday at 1 o'clock. As people say, well, what'd you think about the decision today? I'm like, what decision?
Doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's amazing how people don't know what's going on. Like, yeah. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, the appeals board meant, all it means is that the board of directors is going to look at this fan restriction thing again. Nothing has been decided. Well, it was 7-1. That's why I was having a conversation with somebody like, well, 7-1. I'm like, yeah, 7-1 to say to send it to the board to talk about it. The appeals board can't overrule what the board of directors decides. That's why it's called an appeals board, to figure out whether an appeal should happen, and so they can appeal to the board of directors to say, hey, maybe you should reconsider this because we've had a lot of grievances in regards to parents not making it to games because of the fan restrictions because of COVID-19. So there, I mean, I've had like three or four people say, what do you think about the decision? I'm like, there was no decision. The decision simply was for the board of directors, who were already planning on meeting on Tuesday at 1 o'clock before that appeals board meeting, by the way. It was not a regularly scheduled meeting for tomorrow, but they had already scheduled it before the appeals board meeting on Friday. Of course, the board of directors knew they were going to have to discuss this anyway. So the appeals board meeting on Friday was allowing parents to vent. It was allowing people to make their case for parents to be there for ball games, which, you know, to each their own. I'm okay with that if that's what we decide to do, and if we decide not to, I'm okay with it as well. And so the board of directors will meet, the 78-member board of directors will meet again tomorrow. Hopefully it's not a four-hour meeting. It'll be tomorrow at 1, I'm sure, on Zoom, to reconsider fan restrictions. This was the most highly talked about point during their four-hour meeting a few weeks ago, because I watched this whole thing, and trust me, I lost 4 hours of my life. But it was interesting, somewhat. Amendments to amendments to amendments. But the longest thing they took time on, really, honestly, was the fan restrictions. Uh-huh. There were people saying, listen, if we're going to let the kids play, but then we're going to allow fans, aren't we, like, ignoring all the advice from the Kansas Medical Advisory Board and everything that Bill Pfaffelick put out there, which I thought was a fair point? Mm-hmm. And isn't the adults the ones that spread it, which we've been proven to say that that is true? Can kids spread it? Yes. But adults are bigger problems because adults are spreading around our communities more so than the kids, according to the data. And so there were some administrators that kept pushing, like, it just felt like we kept going to the point where it was like, let's just make it to where nothing gets changed at all. And it's like, how can we ignore all this health data? And so they eventually were like, okay, no more than two fans, or do we go no fans? And they went back and forth, and it was kind of the compromise, I thought. Let the kids play. That's the petition. Let the kids play. It wasn't let the fans attend. That wasn't the petition. And then parents and everybody, a lot of parents apparently had no clue that that could have happened, where there'd be fan restrictions, which means they weren't glued into what was happening. Because I knew this a month ago. I mean, I knew this. Lots of people know this. If you just talk to your local school people, they'll tell you that that was on the table.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a couple administrators and a couple ADs, and they said, yeah, odds, their guess was there would be no fans, or if so, there'd be only one or two allowed. And I don't know what, I know everybody's got their jobs and they got everything to deal with, you know, everyday situations, but they were so focused on let the kids play that they didn't understand that probably what would be on the table is fan restrictions. And here's the reason why I think it's silly that people out there couldn't figure this out, because all you have to do is look at college sports and pro sports. College sports, Allen Fieldhouse, no fans the other day. Bramlage, no fans. I mean, we got football stadiums, no fans. We got pro stadiums, no fans. We got NBA's got no fans. I mean, why do you think high school is supposed to be completely different than college and pro when you're in smaller stadiums and arenas? Well, it's different. It's high school kids. So you're saying it's okay for you to spread it? Because I'm not saying that somebody goes to a game, they're automatically going to spread it. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I've heard the argument, well, you know, all these people go to Lowe's and Walmart. I'm like, yeah, but they don't sit together for 2 hours and talk.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you don't get COVID by walking by somebody. If you did, we would all have it. And we'd all be done with this thing. We'd be over it. If we got it by walking by each other, then there's no reason to wear a mask, and there is no reason to worry about 6 foot distancing. I guess we'd have to walk 6 feet apart from each other. I mean, it's amazing to me how much misinformation is still out there that people don't even know about this. Like, people think that you get it by walking into a Walmart. You don't. What you get is when you walk into any place, whether it's a Walmart or whether it's any store or any arena or any stadium, and it can be outside as well. If you have a long conversation with somebody, they have COVID, you could get it. It could be they have COVID and you won't get it, even though you talk to them for an hour face to face without a mask. It's possible.
Yeah.
Or you could have gotten it, or you don't even know you got it. Or somebody could sneeze or cough in your direction, and even with a mask, you might get it. There's all kinds of things we're still learning. But to sit here and act like it is a little bit different. Like, I hear this, it's not any different than walking. Why are all these people allowed to go and run all over the grocery stores? First of all, you need food to eat. That's essential. Okay, now, I get it. Well, all these people are going to these stores to get stuff that they really don't have to have, but yet they're allowed to go in these stores. I get that. But I will say this. We need our businesses to be open, because if we don't have them open and we don't have people going in to get stuff that they do or do not need, then guess what? All our businesses dry up. Is that what you want? Well, the businesses are allowed to be open, so you know what? All the businesses should shut down because we can't go to a game as a fan. No, that's not the right thinking at all.
No.
You won't have school and you won't have athletic events if your town dries up with no businesses. You'll have nobody living there because nobody has any job, and you'll have no school, thus you have no games, and you have no games to attend. Connect the dots. Okay, so I understand when people say, well, I'm responsible, why can't I attend my kid's game because other people are not responsible, walk into stores. Now, if that's your argument, that's a little bit different. But when you sit here and just automatically say that people in stores are passing COVID, well, you could be right, but that also means you could pass it when you're in a basketball game. Well, you know, they don't gather. Are you kidding me? People do gather after basketball games and after wrestling tournaments. They gather outside to have a smoke. Because they can't smoke inside if they can smoke on school grounds. They can go to the bathrooms and they'll congregate there in the bathroom sometimes, outside the bathroom, in the hallway. Well, you know, they just file out single file all the way out and there won't be any problems. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know for sure. I mean, it's possible. Is everybody going to follow things? People don't follow mask mandates. People don't follow, you know, washing their hands. People don't follow not coughing in somebody's direction for crying out loud or turning your head. I see that all the time still. I mean, I talked about it before for years. I walked into a bathroom at any sporting event that I go to, and half the men that go in the bathroom do their thing, touch their stuff, and don't wash their hands and walk out. Do you think everybody's doing that now?
No.
Oh, of course not. So, you know, it's just... it's mind-boggling to me that we act like we didn't know this was coming. Colleges already had not allowed fans to be at games. Wichita State isn't allowing fans till the end of December. They made that decision a month ago. KU's just now starting to allow fans this week for basketball games. They didn't last week. K-State hasn't allowed fans. I know I was there to cover a game. If you think I'm making this crap up, I'm not. I was there. No fans were allowed, okay, to the public.
Yeah.
So... if colleges aren't allowing it in big arenas with more room and better ventilation, why do you think high school should be completely different? Because my kid's a junior. My kid's a sophomore. My kid's a freshman. My kid's a senior. Yeah, so are the college kids. Well, I invested all this money, and through my kid's career, I need to be able to watch them. So did the college parents. So if you're going to get all riled up about not attending a high school sporting event, which I totally understand, trust me, I do, where were you when all the college parents aren't allowed to attend? Because you didn't give a crap. Because it didn't affect you. But this has been on the table for a very long time, people. You got to open your eyes and get out of the tunnel that you live in and the bubble that you live in. This was already on the table. It had been on the table for quite some time. In fact, we even knew in football there was limited fan... there were fan restrictions for the state title games in football. You think there wasn't going to be for basketball? There were restrictions all year long in football. There were fan restrictions for the sub-state semifinal in Beloit, Kansas against Hoisington. But you thought somehow we go indoors, there'd be no fan restrictions? And you're stunned by the development and thus you're pissed? I mean, come on. You had to have known this was coming if you just thought about it. But until it officially affects you, you don't care. I don't have a kid in football. Don't know, don't care, didn't know what you're talking about. That's okay, live in your little world. That's fine. And then it affects you, and then boom, you come out a blazing. So listen, this is nothing new. The fan restriction thing is not a new concept. In fact, it's been going on for quite some time. Now, whether or not you think the fan restriction is right or wrong, I'm not telling you it is right or wrong. I just want people to wake up. Wake up.
Yes.
You get all mad when the kids aren't allowed to play a full schedule. Now they're allowed to play a full schedule. Now people are mad because they can't attend the games. Now I'm going to tell you right now, the board of directors tomorrow, if they decide only one parent, if they allow one parent per kid, One fan per kid. People still won't be happy. They'll be screaming, oh, why not two?
Yeah.
And then you give them two. You know what it'll be? Why not four? You think school administrators have an easy job? Do you think athletic directors have an easy job? Do you think Keisha has an easy job? Well, guess what? I'm going to have the Keisha executive director on this show tomorrow at 9:30. If you've got a question, instead of bad-talking people and ripping the Keisha organization, who I'm in favor of and against at times, depending on their situation, what they're doing, all right? If you have a question or you have a complaint for Keisha, here's an opportunity. You can always call their office anytime they want, anytime you want, all right? You can ask for Mr. Faflick. You can ask for whoever, all right? If you want your voice to be heard, there's your opportunity. And that's what people did. That's why the appeals board process was important on Friday, even though nothing changed. All that changed was the board of directors going to meet to further discuss this. They may change their mind. They may cave to this pressure, and they may allow one or two fans per student. Or maybe they'll say, you know what, we're done with this. We're just going to, we give up. I don't know what they're going to do for sure. I think they're going to allow something, to be quite honest with you. Don't you?
Yeah.
I think they will because of pressure.
Yeah.
Because the pressure to go from 13 back to full 20 games. We've seen pressure from the Big Ten in college, political pressure, to play football. All right? We see this pressure. And if you want to help apply the pressure, that's fine. There's no problem with that. Just do it in the right way. And so if you want to ask a question of Bill Faflett, the top dog of Keisha, the executive director, who has done a ton more homework than me or Dusty or anyone out there listening about this whole situation, all right? At some point, you have to trust people that are in positions that gather information that you don't have access to. I know we're all cynical of our politicians, and probably rightfully so, all right, in most cases, or some. Maybe most is unfair. But there's a reason that Bill Faflick has his job as executive director. They're not trying to short students. They're not trying to screw the fans. They're not trying to mess up parents' lives. That is not their goal. They would love for everything to be normal and allow anybody to go and do whatever we've done in the past. What they're trying to do is protect kids, but also they're trying to protect communities and trying to protect the healthcare system that we have that is in under stress right now. And so if you have a question for Mr. Faflick, call me. You can ask for me. You can, and I can write down your question. I can record your question. You can email us, kdnskzdy@nckcn.com, and let us know what you want me to ask him. I can't guarantee I'm going to ask him every single question because I only have so much time with the man. But I will look over those questions, and I'll bet you some are already ones I'm going to ask anyway. We will talk about the fan restrictions, which we won't have a decision on that until 1 o'clock tomorrow. We'll have Mr. Faflick on it in the morning, but he may give us some indications on where it may be headed. So just what we need to do is we need to open our eyes, and this is the way we've been saying this all year in an election year. We've got to be a little more open-minded. We need to understand there's bigger things out there in the world than just what's happening in our each individual lives. Yes, what's happening in our individual lives is important to our livelihood. It's very important. But we also need to understand other people around us and care and have empathy for other people. Like if the business goes under, now they don't have a job, or you have somebody you know that you love, but they lost their job because of COVID-19. You know, those people are worse off than a fan not being able to attend a basketball game. Would you agree?
Yes.
Somebody that has no job and can't pay the bills and is going to get evicted is probably a bigger issue than whether or not you or me go to a basketball or wrestling event.
Absolutely.
But too many people don't have that perspective. You know why? Because they've never been in that situation. Yeah. They don't care if other people are losing their jobs, only when it affects them. It's just the way we roll, right?
So, yes.
Anyway, Bill Faflick on tomorrow, 9:30 on Tuesday. I'm just, you know, we try to educate on the show people, and I get fired up because I told my wife this the other day, my tolerance level for, what's the word I'm looking for? My tolerance level for uninformed, uneducated talking points from people, I'm about ready to explode with my brain. Because I'm just to the point where like, oh my Lord, do you not look around? Do you get out at all? I mean, do you talk to anybody besides your own husband and your own wife and your own kids? Do you talk to anybody else? Do you have any idea what's going on? Because I think there are a lot of people out there that are flat out clueless.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. We're 8 months into this, 9 months, almost 9 months into this COVID-19 thing, and there are people that are absolutely clueless. It's not fair. My college kid might not have his full college experience. Boo hoo hoo. There's bigger things in life than that. I mean, I could sit here and whine and bellyache. I could whine and bellyache about how my kid, a freshman's not going to get to play a full season. I can bellyache and whine that right now my wife and my two other sons can't watch their oldest brother play. I could be guilty of all this. I could jump in on the big bandwagon that seems to be growing, and I could rant and scream about all that. But I think I get the bigger picture. You know why? Because I talk to people. I've talked to Courtney Murrow of the health department. I've talked to Dr. Mark Banker at a hospital. I've talked to people, other people who work at the health department. I've spoken with other people. And then people may say, well, Wade, why are you saying all this stuff and you're so passionate about it? Because apparently people aren't doing that. So if I can do it and then send you the information, then you got to trust me I'm giving you the information correctly. And trust me, I am. And if you don't trust me,
you can go back and listen to all this.
You can go back and listen. And if you don't trust me, then go talk to the people yourself. So we need to understand there is a bigger picture. And I hope there are fans allowed if we believe that is the safest thing to do. Mm-hmm. I am okay with that. I am totally okay with being able to see my wife and our other two boys attend a basketball game. So my son, who's a freshman, I want to see play. I don't want to see my kids in quarantines. I don't want to see my kids with COVID. But you know who else I don't want to see with COVID? My mom and dad. Mm-hmm. My superintendent. A really good friend of mine. I don't want to see people have to go through all that just because we're selfish that we want basketball or football or wrestling. If we can do it in a safe manner, then I say we proceed. But if there's tons of people that know a hell of a lot more than Dusty or me or anybody else listening, then I will defer to those people. But it's amazing how everybody's an expert on COVID. Just everybody's an expert, but have no degree or any backing to prove anything that they have. They're just an absolute expert. Well, I saw a link on Facebook. Well, aren't you the expert? Listen, I'm not an expert either, but I will tell you, I'm armed with more information than a lot of people I'm talking to lately. And it's discouraging to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's very discouraging. It's very disappointing. And I'm just amazed at how selfish some of us can be.
I'm not.
I shouldn't be.
I am, and I'm not. You understand why I said what I said. Yeah, it is. I had discussion about this with my sister because, you know, her kid's a junior in high school right now. They played their first game on Saturday all the way in Dodge City. Newton did, and so I kind of was discussing it with her, and we were just kind of, you know, one way or the other, we were just talking about it. We didn't have, like, the answers like some people think they do. But we just said, this is what it is. And, you know, she said that she saw one person talking at that appeals board meeting and said she made some really good points, you know, whether you agree or disagree with the points she made about the case for having a couple fans in the stands for each player. And, you know, people are going to make good cases. And you know, I still feel like, and I was talking to my sister, I still feel like this too is not a one-size-fits-all approach.
No,
I said,
absolutely.
If I go to Dylan's game in Newton, you guys have a very large gym. You have a very large upper deck on one side.
Absolutely.
And you guys can spread out and have two parents per 12 people on the team, right?
Right.
You can have 25 to 30 people, and you can spread out. And so it's a lot of stuff, like you said. But people just don't logically think about all of it like we are when we're talking about it.
This school gets so many fans. Why don't we?
Yeah.
Well, how big's your gym?
Well, you have a... 30 people, and I'm just using it as an example, in Tipton's gym,
is way different than 30 people in Newton's gym.
Yeah.
It's just a fact.
Well, just like all you got to do, look in the town of Beloit. St. John's gym is a lot smaller than Beloit's gym.
Yes.
That's like comparing apples to oranges in regards to the size. So yes. Thus, you
so
can't have as many
protocols
people.
Protocols for your county are going to look a little different
yes.
about social distancing and
right.
doing all those things. So, you know, that's kind of the discussion I had with my sister. Is like you just can't. You can't just say, okay, well, you can have two parents per kid at this gym, but you can't at this gym. And I think that's where Case is in a bind here, is when they have to make a blanket decision
yes.
on things like this.
But we need to say, in fairness to Keisha, and I know this for a fact, the schools have wanted Keisha
yes,
to
exactly.
take the lead in this. So then Keisha takes all the bullets and the knives and the back and everything else, and they take all these shots, and the schools... they have asked Keisha, some schools, not all, that, hey, we would like a uniform approach. And we heard that in the four-hour Zoom meeting a couple weeks ago. They want a uniform approach on the fans. They don't want one school to allow fans in the same league as another one in another county that can't, because now you got all kinds of problems. Why can I go to the gym in Concordia, but I can't go to Beloit's? Why can I go to a game in Osborne, but I can't go to Smith Center?
Yeah.
You see how that works?
Exactly.
So the schools really do want a uniform policy. But now it might be broken down a little bit more in regards to fans now or parents complaining about it, to where they say, okay, maybe we'll allow it to be local counties or local schools, and you make your own decisions. And here's the other thing, and I know this is a side note, but this is what people don't understand about Keisha. Keisha is about their member institutions. They will do pretty much what their members want them to do. We've said forever that we don't like splitting 1A into two divisions. We don't like 4A being split in two divisions as there was, right? We didn't like it. Do you think that was Keisha's plan or idea? It wasn't. It was the idea of Class 4A. It was the idea of Class 1A to go back to two divisions. Thus, Keisha says, okay, it's more work for us. I've had this conversation with Gary Musselman, who used to be the executive director.
Yeah.
It's a lot more work for us. We've got more refs to find. We got more sites to have. We got more tournament games to officiate and everything else. And logistics. It is more work for Keisha. You know what they do? They leave it up to their members to vote on it. The members say that's what they want. So then I got people out in Dodge City and people sitting here going, well, every single, why don't we have all the games for free on TV for state football? And why aren't they all in one site? And then they yell and scream and rant and rave and tag Keisha about how horrible Keisha is because they don't have free streaming for games. When here's the interesting thing, because I've actually talked to the executive director already about this, and I already knew it before that, is that the member schools of Keisha don't want one site for all the state football games. It isn't Keisha's unilateral decision to have eight different sites. You know what would be easier for Keisha? One site.
Mm-hmm.
Keisha would love to have one site. If you pulled every single member of Keisha and you asked them, off the record probably,
yeah.
would you like all the football games at one site or two sites instead of eight different sites individually across the state of Kansas? You know what they would tell you? Yeah.
Yeah.
But the members, not Keisha, the members of Keisha want different state sites spread across the state, which I don't have a major problem with it. My bigger issue is all these games are at the same time at 1 o'clock. It'd be nice to be able to watch more than one state championship football game, because that's all you got, all at the same time pretty much. And so you got people, even in the media, that don't even understand, that rant and rave against Keisha and spew misinformation out there about how Keisha should provide all this stuff for free and don't understand that. You know why you can't do it for free? Well, first of all, you don't have a TV deal like Indiana and Missouri and all these other states in regards to the free state title games on TV. You know why? Because do you think a TV is going to have a lot of... you think it's going to be easy for a TV network to handle eight different sites? No.
No.
But if you go to one site, well, that would probably solve it, right? Yeah. But here's the thing. The members of Keisha don't want that. Now, what's his name in Dodge City may want that. Other people across the state may want it. Media members may want it because it's easier to cover. I can't argue it wouldn't be a bad thing to condense it from eight to, say, two, three, or four. But if the member institutions tell Keisha, we don't want one site for state football, we want to keep it at eight, or if they decide there's enough of a reckoning to where those member schools, there's enough of a push to say, let's put this to a vote to where we only have four sites instead of eight sites for state football, Keisha will listen to that, and more than likely, Keisha will go ahead and allow you to vote.
Yeah.
So Keisha takes the arrows, and people don't understand what Keisha represents. People don't understand what Keisha's trying to do. And they are, as we said before, they're darned if they do and darned if they don't. Tomorrow, if the board of directors says you're allowed one fan, that's better than what you had, right? You know how much still people are going to be ticked off about that? Well, now I got to choose between my husband and my wife.
Yeah.
Now I'm only going to get mom or dad. Why can't I have both? Well, okay, now you get both. Well, now why can't I have grandma and grandpa? Okay, you can have grandma and grandpa. You can have four. What about Uncle Fred and Aunt Betty? Where do you end? Where's it end?
Yeah.
So that's the challenge right now for Kasich's board of directors tomorrow at 1 o'clock is, and by the way, the vote was, I think, 45-26 or something like that for no fans.
Yeah, it wasn't.
So you're going to have to change a good amount of people. What would you need to change? About 10 people, roughly? You get 10 from the yes to the no on fan restrictions?
Yeah, 10 should do it.
Roughly. Yeah, 10 would be probably
it. That would be the number.
So you need to get 10 people that change their minds from what they did a few weeks ago to allow fans. And once again, for the record, I'm cool with whatever Kasich decides on this, and I'm talking about their members. This is just not Kasich. This is 78 members of the Kasich Board of Directors that are all across the state, all right? There is a representative for every single league in this state. All right. Every single league is represented at this board of directors meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So if you want to demand that there be no fans because you're scared if there are fans, you're going to spread the disease. Or if you really want fans to be there, or you want to be there as a parent, you know who you need to talk to? Talk to the contact or talk to your league, whether it's your school principal, your school athletic director, your school superintendent, whatever you got to do, or contact Kasich directly as much as you can. And then you can. Maybe, I don't want to say force change, but you can at least get people to reconsider. Kasich is obviously going to reconsider or at least reevaluate the no fan restriction from now, which was December 1st, by the way, to January 28th. That's what they're going to do tomorrow at 1 o'clock. What are they going to decide? I don't know. My guess is they're going to allow one or two fans. I think they're going to allow two per kid. I think that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to allow two per kid. There has been good points, as Dusty mentioned, the appeals board on Friday in regards to, you know, a kid has an injury. Mom and dad isn't there. You know, they need to sign off on something. Well, a lot of stuff, a lot of emergency paperwork you take care of ahead of time before the school year. There you have waivers, liabilities, and all that. But people are like, well, what if I'm 4 hours away and I can't get to my kid and he broke his leg in a freak accident, wrestling or basketball, whatever it may be. I want to be there for my kid. It's a good point. What if a kid has a medical condition that's playing, you know, he has a hole in his heart, but he's allowed to play type of thing or whatever. I get that. There's always extenuating circumstances. There's always exceptions. Of course, then what will happen is you create an exception, then people are going to take advantage of that exception and use all kinds of loopholes. All right. I know of people that I know in the media have already been inundated by fans that suddenly want to help do video streaming and want to help do radio broadcasts. They don't care about the radio broadcast. They don't care about streaming. They selfishly want to go to the game and they want to find any loophole they can to get in, which I get. But you really, now you're really stretching the truth, aren't we? So, once again, worried about yourself than what other people have to deal with. It is going to be interesting, and Bill Faflick will be on tomorrow, and we might have an inkling maybe of where this might be headed. I'm going to guess he doesn't know, obviously, but it's going to be interesting. Any final thoughts on that?
Well, I'm interested to see if all 78 are going to be there. Like, okay, so you gave the numbers. It was 46-25. Obviously, that does not add up to 78, so there were some people that
dropped out. I think it was 45-26, but close enough.
Yeah, but I mean, that's still 71, right?
There were guys because it was a four-hour meeting that had to go in and out.
Some that dropped out.
I think it right to it.
There might have been some that didn't vote on it, too.
There was, I think, a few abstentions.
Yeah. So I'm just interested to see if all 78 will be present and just how that's going to play out.
Well, and the next thing we mentioned about small gyms. Okay, Beloit's gym is different than, say, a Lakeside gym. And by the way, it's not just – here's the thing that people don't understand either. Everybody thinks it's just the players. You've got cheerleaders – you've got band, possibly. You've got other people that are included in these so many fans per student. It isn't just the players.
Yeah.
So, but every team has, what, 12 players on their varsity, right? If you allow two per person, that's 24.
You've got to cap the varsity team at 12 in this situation.
Right.
Like, but you can't have 14, 15 people suited.
So 12 times two, if you allow two, that's 24.
Yeah.
Now, 24 on the other side for the other team is 48, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's 48 adults you would allow in. And then you're going to have something for cheerleaders, which that might be the bigger schools might have more cheerleaders than the smaller schools, whatever. Mm-hmm. We talk about one gym might be bigger than the other, like Beloit Lakeside, Beloit St. John's, whatever the case may be. But if you have the same amount of people, 48 people spread out in a small gym at St. John's or Lakeside is a lot different than Beloit. Thus, Beloit would have more room to take on more. They could maybe take on four tickets per person, right? per student.
Yeah.
And that's where we get into that discussion tomorrow. Are we going to allow it to be up to the local schools with the bigger facilities versus smaller facilities, and they're going to set the time and the tone?
Well, and that's, I feel like one thing we should probably, you know, once this all gets passed, mm-hmm. if it does get passed, mm-hmm. big if, obviously.
Sure.
Local health departments can still say
they
no
can still
fans
say no.
in the gym.
They can. They can.
And schools can still say no fans in the gym.
They can.
So be ready for that just in case.
That's right.
For some people out there that are like, oh, Keisha said we could come.
Right.
Well, no, Keisha is basically voting on making it blanket for their organization.
Right.
You still had... Keisha did not have any fan limits that they put into place for fall sports. They
That's
left
right.
it up to the local places.
They
so
did.
I just want to, like,
good point.
Throw that out there just in case.
Yeah, don't rejoice if Keisha tomorrow
like,
says,
Keisha's
hey.
Just like, Mitchell County said, no, you can't. Yeah, just an
right.
example. I'm
right.
not saying they're going to say that, but
right.
or any county. You know, Sumner County said, no, you can't. No.
Yeah.
You can't. But based on our health guidelines right now, you can't have fans in the
right.
stands. So just be aware of that, even if Keisha says you can have two, that maybe one county authorities is going to be like, no, you can only have one.
But a lot of people will tell me, well, I don't want the full blanket. And I understand that totally. I do. Like, well, the one thing that works for Lawrence doesn't work for, you know, North Central Kansas. That's all true. You can have, I just presented two gyms in Mitchell County, for crying out loud.
Uh-huh.
They're completely different. So yeah, think about how stressful that can be for administrators and school officials, where every school does something different within your own league. And as a fan, it's confusing because,
yeah.
hey, I can go to Minneapolis and anybody can go. And then I go to Sacred Heart and only one person can go. And I go to Beloit and two people can go. It can be extremely confusing,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Especially if you travel and get confused as to how many fans are allowed and you drive all the way from Salina to Beloit and you're told, oh, mom and dad came, but only one can go in. So you see why the schools kind of do want the blanket policy from that
yeah,
standpoint?
Exactly.
So
yeah.
that it's easy. And the schools don't want... If there's a no fan restriction, the schools can easily say that's Keisha doing it. Whereas this was mentioned on the Zoom a couple of weeks ago. It's interesting you bring this up. There
yeah.
was a small school out in Southwest Kansas that said, listen, we don't want fans. We've had an outbreak out here. We don't want fans. But it'd be easier if we had a blanket policy so that instead of people yelling at us, why do you not have fans, but all these other towns or counties around us do?
Yeah.
Thus, you catch even more heat. Thus, the schools wanted Keisha to take the heat instead of them. Which I understand.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting, that's for sure. That's if we even play games, for crying out loud. Right now, we're not playing very many. So maybe this is a much ado about nothing, possibly, for a while. I don't know. I know there's some games tonight, as we mentioned, but not a lot.
Yeah.
Not a lot. Okay, sorry. Now I feel better. People are out there like, God, Wade, you're not my mom or dad. Settle down. Okay, I get it. I'm just very passionate about it. You know, and if you're going to get mad at me for being passionate about something, and yet you're passionate about having to be at a ball game, then we're more alike than you think. We're
yeah.
passionate. We're just passionate. I'm not against. See, the other thing is, I'm not against mom and dad's going to games. I've never said I'm against that. Never. All I'm trying to get people to understand is why the restrictions are put into place and what is actually happening to where we've gotten to this point. And if all of us were very responsible, all us adults, if we had handled everything the way we should have handled from the very beginning, we might not be in this situation. Right?
Right.
Don't we as parents tell our kids, in order to get this, you have to do this. In order to be personally responsible and accountable, you need to do this. Like, I just had this conversation with my 7-year-old yesterday. He wanted a cupcake. I said, son, no. And he goes, oh, what, dad? I'm like, buddy, the basement has got toys all over the place. I said, you know what? I'll tell you this. You go downstairs, you pick up everything and put it back to where it was in the basement so we don't step on your toys. You can have a cupcake. Guess what? I'm not saying I'm parent of the year because he doesn't listen to me half the time. But this time he did. He wanted a cupcake. He valued it, correctly?
Yeah.
Correct? He went downstairs. He picked up his toys. He came back up. I said, is it all cleaned up? He said, yeah. I went down. I found two things out of place. Not a big deal. I said, put that away and you're good to go. He said, fine. He came upstairs. He had a cupcake. He was happy and I was happy. If you want to be able to have full attendance at games and you see people that aren't doing what you think they should be doing, it's okay to say, hey, wear a mask, or, hey, you know, maybe we should be all careful. Instead of just demanding that we get what we want, maybe we have to earn it better. Maybe we have to do more to earn it. But there's the thing. There's that word. You know what it is, entitlement. Well, we've always had it this way. Well, you know what's constant in life? Death, taxes, and change. And it might be change you don't like. So we'll see how it plays out. All right. One thing that doesn't change, the Chiefs beat the Broncos. We just know that. They went 11 times in a row over the Broncos. And we heard about the Chiefs in, last night in regards to the highlights with Mitch. We heard from Andy Reid on the Broncos. Here's Andy Reid on finishing off the win.
Proud of the guys and the coaches. So I thought the coach had a good game plan. We finished it up when everything wasn't going right. So in years past, maybe you don't win that game. And I appreciated the intensity and the championship attitude that these guys showed today and demonstrated, and the desire to win the game. And then, listen, to be in the playoffs, you know, that's a great thing. We do have work to do here. So we didn't talk at all about it in the locker room. About the playoffs, we just talked about getting ourselves ready for next week.
Patrick Mahomes on finding a way to win last night.
We just battle tested. I mean, we've played in a lot of tight football games. We have to find ways to win. Obviously, we didn't play the way we wanted to as far as in the red zone of executing and scoring touchdowns instead of field goals. But in this league, you have to find a way to win. Every single team is going to bring their best shot and going to have a chance to beat you. And as long as you come out with the win in the end, it doesn't have to be pretty. And I thought the guys did a great job of battling today and finding a way.
It wasn't pretty, but they won. Mahomes 25 of 40 for 318 and a touchdown. 31 touchdown passes, just two interceptions, although he had one that should have been picked yesterday. Him and Kelsey were off at times. And how about Tyreek Hill? Last night, Tyreek Hill should have had three touchdown receptions. He ended up with zero. You remember the three?
I remember the two for sure.
Yeah, people forget the one early when he was wide open and Mahomes either missed him track of the ball. Yeah. Hill was wide
open.
Because
was wild on the other two.
Right.
That should have happened and were actually in the end zone catches.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yeah, he did. They missed bad on that one.
Yeah, they just weren't on the same page there. So when you look at this game, the Chiefs scored 22 points. They still won 22-16. Didn't play well all night. Give the Broncos credit. They played well. I thought the defense, you know, the defense of the Broncos gave up a ton of yards. But it comes down to points. Just like their Chiefs give up 179 rushing yards. I personally don't care when you only give up 16 points.
Yeah.
So the Broncos can say, you know what? We'll give the Chiefs 600 yards of offense. But if they get six field goals, we're okay. And that's kind of what happened last night. Five field goals and one touchdown. The Chiefs in the red zone were one of five in getting touchdowns. And they had four other times there were field goals. But there are 7 points they should have had. Mahomes had Hill wide open, missed him, or Hill wasn't on the same page. Then the Chiefs, it was a 3-3 game, and Tyreek Hill somehow catches a pass that he didn't even know he caught. And I have to admit, I didn't think he caught it either. I didn't think much of it. And then they showed the replays, and right when Andy Reid realized it, because the crowd saw it on the Jumbotron, the replay, and as soon as Andy Reid realized that he should challenge, Tommy Townsend was already punting the football. And so the Chiefs actually didn't accept a touchdown that they would have had they challenged. Here's Andy Reid on missing the review and missing out on the touchdown that would have made it 10-3 Chiefs.
Tyreek had a couple touchdowns. I'll take blame for the one that I've never had a receiver that didn't know he caught the ball. So, I mean, he came off and said he didn't catch it, and I probably should have hung on to that just a little bit longer to look at the replay. But I've been doing this a couple of years. I've never had that situation, so it was a new experience for me. I'll try to do better. Try to do better the next time.
And Reed, what does he typically look for in a review?
They were on it right when they saw it, and that was right when we were punting the ball. So, I mean, it was a bang bang thing, and we didn't have time to really look at it. Before we kicked the ball. So we kicked it with about 10 seconds left. And normally that's kind of where you let it go down to right in that area and go with it. But I checked with Tyreek. He came off. And, you know, you can normally tell with a receiver if he knew he had it or not. And especially Tyreek. I mean, so he was as surprised as any of us that he ended up with the football.
Hill didn't think he even caught it. Usually a receiver will be jumping up and down. Review it, even when they don't catch it. Oh, review it. Come on, I caught it. And you're like, no, you didn't, dude. I hit the turf clearly. That was a wild play. So then what happens right after that? Melvin Gordon, 65-yard run. Denver goes down, scores a touchdown. Should be Chiefs 10-3. Instead, it's Denver 10-3. So the Chiefs gave up 6-7 points on a wide-open Hill, missed. Then they had a touchdown they didn't want, apparently. Of course, you know, it was a weird play. I'll cut Andy a little bit of slack on that.
I kind of would like to see, like, what the officials did in that situation, because I never really went back.
The one that called it couldn't have possibly seen it from the one side.
Yeah.
Now, the other official on the other side, I don't know how he would have seen it either. And it was a weird play. I have a hard time blaming the officials.
I'm not blaming them. I just want to see what their reaction was to the play, because I really wasn't paying attention to that part of it.
Yeah. Hill just was like, dang it, I didn't catch it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think the only question I have is, I know there's somebody up in the box or up in the booth that is in charge of basically telling Andy Reid challenge or not challenge, kind of like you see the Royals with the replay reviews. Like, they got Bill DePuisi who'll say, hey, man, you know, we need to review that. And then the other thing, of course, punting the ball 10 seconds, why not give yourself a little more time? But normally that's what Chiefs do anyway.
Yeah.
And it's when Hill doesn't say anything, Andy's like, oh, I probably got nothing to challenge. And that's why I guess you got to, whoever's up in that booth in the suite or whatever's got to really look at every single play as if it's going to be a play that you got to review. And so maybe somebody's caught napping, or it's just a weird play and everybody missed it. I'll have to admit, be honest, ladies and gentlemen, as a Chiefs fan, did you see that live that he caught it? I didn't see that he caught it live. I'm talking live.
Yeah.
Did you think he caught it live?
No.
I didn't have the right angle to see it, watching it live on my TV. Now, they show the replay. They had the right angle, and they had to zoom in, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Refs can't zoom in when they're calling the play. I understood it. I mean, is it a bummer that you lost the touchdown? I just think there's somebody up in the review booth or for the Chiefs somewhere upstairs, maybe just wasn't quite as sharp as it should have been, or it just caught them by surprise as well. That was a weird play. You know, then later on, the Chiefs have second goal at the one, third and goal inside the one, and they get cute both times, you know, and they end up settling for a field goal. You know, you run the Mahomes in motion, and then, you know, direct snap the Bell, and he doesn't get it. And then you run Tyreek Hill going backwards, parallel to the line of scrimmage with 1 yard to go. The quarterback sneak is not in the playbook anymore for the Chiefs because of the horrible injury that Mahomes had last year. It could have been much more horrible in Denver. Now, maybe they'll pull it out in a Super Bowl if they need, you know, inches. They'll take a chance on their $500 million quarterback. I doubt it, but maybe. So you don't have that option. Somebody said, why don't you bring Chad Henne in and run a quarterback sneak? I said, here's the thing. You're going to know the sneak's coming if you do that, more than likely. So, you know, maybe that's something to think about. I don't know. Maybe go more Wildcat with Kelsey to run it in. I'm open to anything. Because when the Chiefs are better third and goal at the 5 or the 10 than they are third and goal at the 1, I can't stand the Chiefs in second or third and 1, fourth and 1. I'm nervous. But when the Chiefs had third and 10, I'm not worried. Does that make any sense?
It does, but it shouldn't.
Right. Exactly. It's just weird. Okay, so the Chiefs then settle for a field goal when they should have had a touchdown. Second goal at the 1, you should score a touchdown. So that's, I've given you what? 7 points, wide open Hill. 7 points when he did catch it and the Chiefs didn't review it. That's 14. Then they had second goal inside the 1, didn't score, got a field goal. So they didn't get the touchdown. That's 18 points they left on the field. Then they're up 19-16, and they bring an all-out blitz. And I'm like, thank you. Right away, I'm like, Mahomes got him burned. And there's Tyreek Hill. Tyreek catches it wide open. Touchdown, Kansas City. Game over. 26-16, right there, up 10. And there's a holding penalty on Nick Allegretti. There's another 7 points off the board they left on the field. Now, if you want to say it's a penalty, so you shouldn't count those seven left on the field, fine. I'll stick with my first 18. So the Chiefs have 18-25 points they left on the field. Last week at Tampa Bay, they left 13 or 14 points on the field. They've left all these points on the field and still won both games.
Yeah.
Now, you can look at it two ways. One, well, they left all those points on the field and still won, so that's a sign of a great team. Imagine when they figure it all out. Or you can be pessimistic and go, that's going to catch up and bite us. Depends on which way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs are going to get it figured out. 7 straight trips inside the red zone, they came away with no touchdowns. 6 or 7 straight trips, which is crazy.
They're
usually the best red zone offense until the Tampa Bay game. Pretty crazy stuff. Things that we've talked about with the Chiefs in regards to some concerns. The pass rush, I still thought wasn't very good last night. When they got pressure, it was most of the time. Now, Chris Jones did make a couple plays there in the fourth quarter. I did note on my notepad that he did that when it was obvious passing situations. But he still made a couple plays. He made a great play on a running play. So I saw more out of Chris Jones last night, especially in the third and fourth quarter, than I've seen last few weeks. So that made me feel a little better. But the pass rush really wasn't that good, though, was it?
Not really. Again, the best part of it is when they're bringing other guys to put pressure on, when they're blitzing Dan Sorensen or somebody like that.
Right,
you know,
I'm saying. There's no pass rush. Can you get one without a blitz?
Still, you need to be able to get there.
Yeah.
I guess they put a little pressure on, like you said, later in the game, but not enough for me to feel real great about it.
Right. The Chiefs last night ran for 134 yards and averaged like 6 yards a carry. Bell, 11 carries, 40 yards. Darrell Williams, some really hard runs there at the end. Now, Le'Veon Bell frustrates people, I'm sure, because if they haven't seen him in the past, he really takes a long time before he makes a decision. And sometimes that does drive me nuts as well.
Yeah.
Whereas just hit the hole and go, dude. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire had been sick all week, so he was basically...
I wish he would have just been inactive. I would have taken him off my
fantasy team. I know. Yeah. He wasn't inactive. He was active, and he was probably the emergency running back in case there were some injuries. That's why he was there. But, yeah, as a fantasy owner, you're like, dude, I'd just like to know if he's going to play or not. So that hurt some people. You know, the running game was okay. The offensive line, I thought, did fine. My good friend in Kansas City said his biggest concern is the protecting Mahomes in passing situations. He thought the offensive line didn't do a good job last night. I thought they did a good job last night. I mean, I know he got sacked once, maybe twice, but you know, really the problem for Mahomes was he got passes knocked down at the line of scrimmage. And that means the offensive line's protecting Mahomes. It's just all they can do is put their arm up and knock the ball down. So I didn't think the pass protection was that bad last night. I really didn't. And then Kelsey, you know, he's a story. 8 catches, 136 yards, touchdown, 5 straight 1,000-yard seasons for Kelsey. No tight end's ever done that in NFL history. And he was clutch last night. He was clutch. He had some big-time catches. Then after the game, forgot who they were playing and mentioned the Raiders instead of the Broncos, which was kind of funny. I don't think you meant to say that. But to me, I took it as the Raiders are more of a threat than the Broncos. So maybe he did mean something by it.
Yeah.
Here's Mahomes on having Mr. Kelsey and what Kelsey does for this team, and he did it again last night.
A great teammate. I mean, he really doesn't care how you win the football game. He just wants to win. He's going to compete every single play. He's going to block. He's going to catch. He's going to run after the catch. He's going to do whatever it takes. And so when you have guys like that are that talented and they don't care about who gets the success, then you have the guys that really can go out there, execute, and win football games with.
Defense did give up a lot of rushing yards, 179, although 65 on one play, but I know that still counts towards the total. But the key number is the Chiefs held the Broncos to 16 points. That's the only number you need to worry about. You can get all caught up in how many rushing yards, yards per carry. If the Chiefs hold a team to 16 points but give up almost 200 yards rushing, that means they probably got a couple of turnovers, and that's what they did last night. Tyrann Mathieu got 2 picks. Here's Andy Reid on Mathieu and the defense.
I just saw Tyrann did a beautiful job on starting the game and finishing the game. With 2 interceptions and that kind of led the way. That was great enthusiasm for the defense. I thought our defense, you know, played a good game.
I thought defense played, you know, pretty well last night. Like I said, the run defense wasn't great. The secondary I thought held up for the most part. Breland got burned on a couple plays. Frank Clark is still AWOL though. I mean, Frank Clark didn't make many plays last night.
No.
I'm a little bit more concerned about him now that we're already in through 12 games. You know, last year he kind of turned it up after the Tennessee loss. So I'm starting to wonder about Frank Clark a little bit. I mean, that's a guy making $100-some million. So we talk and criticize Chris Jones. It's probably fair to criticize Frank Clark as well. Now I'll go to what I usually go to try to be objective here. And that is, when will coaches in this league figure out what you do against Mahomes and the Chiefs offense? When will coaches figure it out? Matt Rhule had it figured out, honestly. Mm-hmm. He just didn't have enough firepower to beat the Chiefs. Did Vic Fangio see anything at all when the Chiefs played the Panthers? Maybe not. The Broncos coaching staff, ever since Mahomes became the quarterback, they just make these really weird decisions, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, for instance, why are you kicking a 57-yard field goal before halftime when there's 35 seconds left? Oh, I know. You think the guy's going to make it, but that's not a high percentage make, and you're not in Denver with the altitude, okay? So right away, I was like, this is a bad decision. And I was like, I hope you kick the field goal. And they did, and they should have punted it or gone for it. Gone for it would have been better. But punting it would have been the best because, and the Chiefs still might have got a field goal. Mahomes could have been his own 5 with 25 seconds. They still might have got a field goal. Here's the thing. The Chiefs went down, almost had a touchdown. So instead of the Broncos being up 10-6 at halftime, instead they go for the 57-yard field goal, which is questionable. But I know if the kicker makes it, you know, it's different. I'll cut a little bit of slack for Fangio on that one. You're trying to get points. I understand it. But it's not a high percentage play. And then you get the Chiefs have the ball at their own 47. Well, that's easy. One pass, boom, field goal range. So that's a 6-point swing. You give them the Chiefs 3 points. So now it's a situation where it could have been 10-6 going to halftime, and now it's 10-9. It could have been down 13-10. Here's another one I don't understand. You're up 16-12 in the third quarter. You get a touchdown. Why are you going for 2? Right away, I'm scratching my head going, why are you going for two? Like, maybe in the fourth quarter you go for it. Why are we going for two in the third quarter?
I had no idea.
Because a touchdown still beats you. I mean, 16-18. Okay, well, two field goals tie you. And granted, the Chiefs said they'll kick four field goals. I guess maybe that was the thinking. But I was too early to go for two. And it almost came back to bite them because, you know, the Chiefs then got the touchdown and an extra point, 19-16. And if the Broncos go down, kick a field goal, tie the game, go to overtime and lose, people be like, why didn't you take the one and you would have won the game?
Or if it's 19-17, exactly.
You would have won with a field goal.
Win with a field goal.
Right. So I thought that was chasing two too early. And the last one is the one that no coaches seem to understand. And I'm so thrilled as a Chiefs fan that coaches in this league don't get it. I love it. I don't know when coaches are going to figure it out. You know, the Bill O'Brien and Houston Texans figured out at Arrowhead in the regular season last year, but then they didn't figure it out in the playoffs. Anthony Lynn never figured it out, and that'll be one of the many things that'll get him fired, and he's going to be gone in L.A. with the Chargers. Matt Rhule figured it out, and that's why they almost beat the Chiefs, and they were certainly the underdog in that game and nearly pulled off the victory. Jim Harbaugh gets it to an extent. But Vance Joseph of the Denver Broncos didn't get it, and Vic Fangio still doesn't get it. You have the ball trailing the Chiefs at Arrowhead 19-16. You have 4th-and-3 at your own 49-yard line with 6:13 to go, and you punt. You run for 179 yards against this defense. I mean, the play before was 3rd-and-3. I'm like, why don't they run Gordon? And they threw it. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. Your strength's not throwing it with Drew Lock in this situation. Your strength's running it, and you don't go to your strength against our weakness. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because right there, if you're a Denver Bronco fan, aren't you screaming at the TV going, dude, this is 4-down territory, 3rd-and-3, let's run it. We don't get it, we'll go for it anyway. It's amazing to me. These coaches get paid all this money. If you play the Raiders, maybe that's the right play. You play the Chargers, the Patriots, you play other teams, that might be the right play. But against the Kansas City Chiefs, when you're a heavy underdog and you've got nothing to lose, you're 4-7, man. You're going nowhere. Okay, 4-6. Now 4-7. Your defense, I hear the argument, well, you punt the ball because your defense is playing so well. I can have a counter argument. If you think your defense is playing so well, then why are you worried about giving it up at midfield on 4th-and-3? Why not go for it? Because guess what? If you go for it and you hold the Chiefs to a field goal at midfield and the Chiefs go score a field goal, you're still only down 6. So instead of having 45 seconds to get the ball is when they eventually got it back, down 6, you could have gotten the ball back with probably 3 or 4 minutes left because the Chiefs would have been already at midfield had you not picked up the 4th-and-3. There's a stat that says Denver, it's called a surrender index. This punt ranks as the 99.6% percentile of cowardly punts of the 2020 season. And the 98th percentile of all punts since 2009, which basically means you're waving the white flag when you punt it. Now, if the Broncos weren't moving the ball at all, the Chiefs had the doomsday defense, the steel curtain defense, the Bears 85 defense, the Ravens 2000 defense, and the Broncos can't do anything offensively all night long, I get it. You punt. But not there. So thank you, Vic Fangio. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. I don't know when coaches are going to figure it out. You know, the Raiders have kind of figured it out. They'll go for it in multiple situations, although Gruden had a 4th-and-1 at the goal line, took a field goal earlier this year, which I'm like, that's okay. You think the Chiefs aren't happy you're going to settle for 3? Like I go back to the playoff game last year. You're up 21-0. You can go for the kill shot at Arrowhead in the divisional playoff game. You're Bill O'Brien. You have 4th-and-inches, half a yard. You kick a field goal. My Lord, man, you've got him right where you want him. All you got to do, you've got the guy wobbling on the canvas, and all you got to do is punch him or blow on, just breathe on him, and he'll fall down, and you turn around and go back to your corner like, yeah, we're good. Let him recoup. And I love it. I love it. As a Chiefs fan, I love it. But if you're a fan of a Broncos or you're a fan of the Raiders or the Chargers or anybody else in this league, other than Matt Rhule, you got to think differently when you're playing Mahomes in the Chiefs offense. And I know the Chiefs only scored 22 last night. We told you they left 20 on the field. Why are you scared?
Yeah.
Is it just you go to the manual and go, well, 4th and 3, the rules state that I have to punt here? No, it doesn't. But thank you. All right, NFL wrap from over the weekend. Saints win 21-16. No Drew Brees, no problem. Chiefs play the Saints in a couple weeks in New Orleans, and I have to say, I think the Chiefs would be better off facing Drew Brees than Taysom Hill. Not because Taysom Hill's a better quarterback, but because he can run and throw. He might be more inconsistent, but Drew Brees isn't a threat to run. He's a guy that's going to stay in the pocket. So for the Chiefs defense, it'd be better to face Drew Brees. That's just my opinion. I may be wrong. Saints 21-16, they're 10-2, number one seed in the NFC. Lions, Bears 34-30, Lions win. Colts win over the Texans 26-20. Dolphins are 8-4, 19-7 over the Bengals. Chiefs go to Miami next week. Noon kickoff, 11 o'clock pregame on KD Country 94. We're going to have that one on KD Country 94 because we got KU basketball at the same time next Sunday. Vikings beat the Jaguars on a last-second field goal, 27-24 in overtime there. The Raiders, the Jets find a way to lose, which is probably good for them. Raiders with a 43-yard pass at the buzzer to win 31-28 because the Jets decided to go all-out blitz, which made no sense when you're up 4 and the other team has the ball at basically midfield. But okay. The Browns win. A very, very impressive performance of the Browns. Baker Mayfield, 4 touchdown passes first half by Baker. Browns maybe are for real. They beat Titans 41-35. Really wasn't that close per se. Browns were up 38-7 at half. The Rams beat the Cardinals 38-28. Rams are in a tie with the Seahawks now. The Seahawks, I can't figure out. Seahawks lost to the Giants at home 17-12. I had the Seahawks going to the Super Bowl. Looked like it early in the year. Now they got all kinds of issues. So the Rams and Seahawks are tied atop the division. The Cardinals now are outside the playoff picture, looking back in. They've lost, I think, 3 in a row. Packers beat the Eagles 30-16. Jalen Hurts came in place of Carson Wentz in the second half and played all right. So now you have to wonder if there's a quarterback controversy. Giants, by the way, are 5-7, lead the division. The Patriots crushed the Chargers 45-0. Chiefs win 22-16 over the Broncos. 11 straight wins for the Chiefs over the Broncos. We've got a couple of games today for football. We've got Monday afternoon game. It's the Washington football team at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Go Alex Smith and the Washington football team. You're a Chiefs fan. You want the Steelers to lose so you can tie them for the top seed in the AFC. Bills at the Niners. That's an interesting game. Niners need a win to stay in the playoff picture. The Bills need a win to stay above Miami in the NFC, AFC East. And then tomorrow evening, 7:05, the Cowboys will be at the Ravens. As the Ravens, supposedly Lamar Jackson will be back from COVID. So that's a look at the NFL picture from over the weekend. When it comes to college football, it was a rough, rough day for the Kansas State Wildcats. They get smoked by Texas, 69-31. So much for my prediction of KU State winning that game. I said last week on the show on Friday that I didn't think Texas would be that motivated. I had half of it right. K-State didn't look very motivated at all. I was disturbed by what I saw. I don't want to overreact too much, but I was disturbed by how horrible the tackling was. I don't know. Coach Kleiman said afterwards it wasn't because of a lack of effort. I thought there was some lack of effort at times on defense. That's just me. And when you continually get run through and run past, maybe that's just natural to happen. I don't want to say the defense quit, but I do think the effort wasn't fully there at times. I may be wrong. K-State loses 69-31. The defense for K-State was abysmal. Texas, 31 points first half, 35 in the third quarter. Texas had 608 yards of offense, 334 on the ground, averaged 10 yards a carry. 10 yards a carry, a first down every time they touched the ball running it. And Bijan Robinson averaged 19 yards a carry. That's right, 19 yards a carry. Deuce Vaughn is the bright spot. Continued to rewrite the K-State record books on Saturday. 2 touchdowns, 221 all-purpose yards. Ran for 125 and 2 touches, 45 yards receiving. Vaughn now holds the K-State freshman record for yards from scrimmage, all-purpose yards, and rushing yards. He was a bright spot this year. Coach Kleiman talking about how K-State has to get better.
We have to continue to recruit. We have to continue to develop because we're not as close as we are. From the fact that we had 2 games and we lost by a total of 3 points, we're still a long ways away as far as getting kids, not to buy in, but getting kids to be bigger, faster, stronger. That's got to be them making the commitment to say, you know what, I wasn't as good as the kid I went across against today or last week or 2 weeks ago and whatever it was. And I have to take that ownership of myself and get to be bigger and stronger.
Coach Kleiman was asked if he reevaluates the season a little bit differently in the offseason after ending this year with 5 straight losses.
I don't know how you can even ask that, Kellis. We didn't have an offseason last year. That's a tough one for me to answer. We reevaluate everything, whether we win 5 in a row, lose 1 in a row, lose 5 in a row. But when we didn't have an offseason and didn't have a summer, it's a tough one to answer.
Well, that Oklahoma win for K-State seems like an eternity ago, doesn't it? And K-State started the year 4-0 in the Big 12. We were talking about a Big 12 championship game appearance, possibly. They lose five straight to end the year. They could easily beat Baylor, could easily beat Oklahoma State. Now, that wouldn't have been good enough to get in the Big 12 title game, but would have looked a lot better, obviously, if you would have been 6-4 instead of 4-6, and then you would have been 6-3 in the Big 12. There is still a chance, unless I haven't seen anything here, but there is no win requirement for bowl eligibility this year. So technically, somebody could tell K-State, hey, we'd love for you to come be in our bowl game. And then K-State would have to make a decision whether or not to accept that invitation. I can see this working both ways. I could see, you know what, let's just, it's been a long year. Let's just get to the offseason. We'll figure out who wants to be here, who doesn't, and we'll move on. But at the same time, you got a lot of guys that missed practices this year, whether it be juniors, sophomores, or freshmen, that if you can get more practice time, win or lose the bowl game, that would help you make up for maybe some time you lost with all the contact tracing and positive cases and all that. So, and they usually say, they, as in the experts or coaches, will usually tell you at least, that it is beneficial to get all those extra practices in. That's why you want to be bowl eligible, so that you can get those extra practices, give you a head start going into next year. This might be a little bit different because it's a weird year. It will be interesting to see if K-State is offered a bowl game appearance and if they take it or not. I think they will, but I don't know. Based on the talk I'm hearing after the game, it almost sounds like they're resigned that their season's over, which maybe they know that they won't get invited to a bowl game. I don't know. But technically, every single team imaginable is, like, KU's eligible for a bowl game. Hey, Max, KU can go to a bowl game yet. They can. They can. There's no win requirement, thank God. So K-State ends the year 4-6, at least we think they end the year 4-6, unless there is a bowl game in their future. KU's 0-9, 0-8 in the Big 12. They lost to Texas Tech 16-13. They were +4 in the turnover category. It's usually hard to lose games when you're +4 in the turnover category. It's hard to lose games when you're +4. It's hard to win games when you're -4, but that tells you Texas Tech was clearly the better team. But on one particular day, KU's defense played very well. KU's defense played very well. They forced the four turnovers, kept their team in it, but once again, the offense just not much there. And here's Les Miles, though, talking about building off a close loss. Of course, KU won last year against Texas Tech. This year, they nearly beat Texas Tech. They had their chances.
There's another game to play, and we're certainly going to not make excuses, and we're going to look forward to preparing to play that team. I think our team can be a more talented team. I think we have to be with them. I think we have to be with them a spring. I think there's a competitive element to time frame that I think we could be a lot better team than we are right now. But I still like how our kids played today. This defensive group played awfully hard.
Okay, you still got one more game to play against Texas, a makeup game Saturday at 2 o'clock pregame on Z96.3 The Lake. Also, by the way, Max won't like to hear this. Maybe already knows, Puka Williams declaring for the NFL draft. So Puka Williams, who opted out earlier this year, their really star offensive player, had a great freshman season at KU, kind of went downhill after that gradually, not off the field issue, of course, as we know. But Puka Williams is not going to come back to Kansas. Most people speculated that when he opted out. He's going to declare for the NFL draft and chase his NFL dreams. So no Puka Williams returning next year for the University of Kansas. So not good news for KU fans, but I think most of us knew that's probably what was going to happen. Oklahoma State loses at TCU. TCU won despite five turnovers. That's right. TCU turned it over five times, still beat Oklahoma State. So that means Oklahoma State's not worthy of being in the Big 12 title game anyway. So they lose. They're out. West Virginia at Iowa State. Iowa State rolls 42-6. Oklahoma beat Baylor. Bit of a tussle, but they won 27-14. So Oklahoma and Iowa State, a rematch of a game Iowa State won in Ames earlier this year. It's the Big 12 title game on December 19th. Oklahoma against Iowa State. Oklahoma still has a game to play against West Virginia in Morgantown coming up this weekend. And if you're Oklahoma, there's still something to play for there. You may say, well, you're in the Big 12 title game. Why would you worry about the game against West Virginia? If you beat West Virginia and win the Big 12 title game, there is still an outside chance you could somehow make this college football playoff. I think it's a long shot, but there still would be possibly a chance. The Huskers and Nebraska win at Purdue 37-27. And the Huskers now 2-4. Adrian Martinez back as the starting quarterback. Ran for two touchdowns, passed for another to help Nebraska to the win over Purdue. Martinez was 23 of 30 for 242, and he rushed for 45 yards for the Huskers. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is what you need to have your kids listen to, all right? Instead of complaining and whining till your dreams come true, have people, and instead of transferring out when things get tough, that we've seen lots of transfers, lots of kids opting out for KU, K-State, and Texas and other schools, listen to what Adrian Martinez has to say here.
That's something I take a tremendous amount of pride in. That's what matters to me. When my role changed, when I wasn't the starter, I made sure to remain a captain, remain a great teammate, and nothing's going to change. I know I'm responsible for making sure my team's ready to go, focused and motivated. So I was trying to do all those things today, and it paid off.
How about that? I get benched. I don't sulk. I don't whine. I don't complain. I'm still a captain. I'm going to do what's best for my team. Mr. Martinez, young man, you get it. And kudos to you, man. Scott Frost, head coach of Nebraska, on the better offensive play. And it really does start with good quarterback play.
We execute a lot better, and it's no secret. It's what we've been preaching to them. We had our really good Wednesday practice, a really good Thursday practice. We've been completing a high percentage of balls in practice with both quarterbacks. The detail's just been better. And we preached that for 3 years, but I think the message got across even more clear after the couple mistakes that cost us against Iowa, and the guys responded.
Nebraska play Minnesota at home at 11 a.m. this Saturday. Minnesota's last game or two have been canceled due to COVID, but it sounds like they're in better shape now. So Nebraska hopefully will get that game in this weekend against Minnesota at 11 a.m. Top 25 wrap, A&M of Texas A&M, number 5, won over Auburn 31-20. They still have a chance to make the playoff. Ohio State down all kinds of players, but still won against Michigan State 52-12. North Carolina rolled Western Carolina 49-9. Let's see, what else do we have here? Trying to see. This is Saturday games. Oh, yeah, the big game, of course. Syracuse lost to Notre Dame 45-21. Iowa beat Illinois 35-21. And number six, Florida over Tennessee, 31-19. But the big game, and by the way, John Bowden's Colorado Buffaloes, 4-0. They beat Arizona 24-13. Alabama number one all over LSU, 55-17. And number 10, Miami, shut out Duke 48-0. Clemson beat Virginia Tech 45-10. Clemson and Notre Dame will be in the ACC title game now. And then the big game was really cool. BYU, on 2 days' notice, basically, they agreed Thursday to play at Coastal Carolina. Remember, Coastal Carolina whipped KU the season opener? Coastal Carolina is undefeated at 10-0. They beat BYU 22-17. BYU was stopped at the one-yard line on a pass play to end the game. Very exciting game. So you have two mid-majors, and they were delegated to ESPNU, although College Game Day was at Coastal Carolina. And they had the Oregon-Cal game on regular ESPN. And you have two top 20 teams battling out there, both undefeated, and they were relegated to ESPNU. So you see what happens with the networks, why these mid-majors don't get as much attention as they deserve, because the big networks don't typically want to give them that attention, apparently. And that's too bad. Turning to basketball, the KU Jayhawks survive a scare. They went 65-61 over North Dakota State.
Brown right wing to the foul line. Sideline left to Grant Foster with 7 to shoot. Slants into the lane. In from the left off the glass. Powers it up and in. And Kansas leads with 1:15 to play.
Tyon Grant Foster came up big in a season-high 22 minutes. The JUCO transfer from Kansas City, Kansas, had 8 points, 8 rebounds, 2 block shots, and 2 steals. That layup with 1:20 to play gave KU the lead for good, and then he had a huge block at the end as well. Jalen Wilson, another solid game, 14 points, 15 rebounds for the Jayhawks. Bill Self on North Dakota State, the Bison, they were up, and KU scored the final 7 in the final 3.5 minutes. KU was down by 3 with 3.5 to go at home. No fans, of course, at Allen Fieldhouse. That could have helped KU in that game, of course. But KU did find a way to win. Here's Bill Self on the Bison.
I don't know that they surprised me. I think their size may have, the way they played to their size, I think may have surprised a little bit. But they were kind of what we thought they would be. They're a very good team that hadn't made shots yet, and you know, I don't know if we can defend them any better than we did the first 3 possessions, and they come away with 8 points. And the, you know, that was the thing about them. You know, they played great. It was good for us to go against a team that played that well.
So KU wins. They're 4-1. They escaped the scare there, and now they'll get another test against a ranked team. Number 9, Creighton, comes out on Fieldhouse. That'll be 3:30 pregame tomorrow afternoon. Kind of a weird situation. You know, a top 10 matchup on a workday afternoon. Tomorrow at 4 o'clock, tip-off, pregame at 3:30 on Z96.3 Lake. KU, number 7, hosting number 9, Creighton. That should be a good one. KU at home. And there will be a limited amount of fans. I believe they're going to allow 2,500 fans in the Allen Fieldhouse coming up tomorrow and then later on this week. K-State, meanwhile, the men are 1-3. They lose to UNLV 68-58. UNLV, I believe, hadn't won a game going in. Bruce Weber on the loss to the runner-ups.
I don't know that they surprised me.
I'm sorry, wrong cut. Here we go.
We know every game's going to be tough for us. and we knew they're 0-4. They You know, they had battled in a bunch of games. I thought they played with great toughness. Obviously, they stepped up and made some shots. They made some tough ones. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, make shots, you can win games. We have layups after layup after layup that we did not finish. You know, we shoot for the game 36 and they shoot 50. They out-toughed us for balls in the second half. That's why I called timeout right away. You know, Monty's not in there, so now you got mixed up lineups, but, you know, other guys got a rebound.
K-State will be back in action tomorrow night at home against Fort Hays State. They added that game to their schedule. They'll be at 7 o'clock tomorrow night at Bramlage. The game will be on ESPN+. No single-game tickets available for the contest. K-State Athletics limiting 15% capacity at Bramlage, which will be filled by season ticket holders. The Fort Hays State Tigers are 0-3, but every game has been close. Lost by 2 to Washburn, lost by 2 to Emporia State, lost by 4 to Nebraska Kearney. It counts as an exhibition game for Fort Hays State, but a regular season game for K-State, which I think is kind of interesting. It's the first regular season meeting between K-State and Fort Hays State since 2009. They've met in exhibition play 3 times in the last 10 years, and the game replaces K-State's road game at Butler in the Big 12 Big East battle that was originally scheduled for Saturday, but has since been canceled due to COVID-19-related issues with the Butler Bulldog basketball team. Wichita State Shockers now 1-1. They lose to Missouri at home over the weekend, 72-62. Also in college basketball, number 1 Gonzaga was supposed to play number 2 Baylor on Saturday. Everybody was excited. In the morning of the game, the plug was pulled. Gonzaga's paused all team activities due to COVID-19 protocols after 2 positive tests within the basketball program from one player and another member of its traveling party led to the postponement of their highly anticipated matchup against number 2 Baylor in Indianapolis. Gonzaga will not return to action until December 15th, so they're going to cancel their upcoming games against Tarleton, Southern, Northern Arizona, and Idaho. Gonzaga is still set to face number 3 Iowa on December 19th in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, so stay tuned there. But the number 1 team in America, and to me they are the number 1 team in America, although Baylor's pretty good too. Unfortunately, they're going to have to not play games for well over a week because of COVID-19, so we don't like it, I know, as fans, but something we're going to have to get used to because college and pro basketball is going to deal with a lot more reschedules and cancellations, postponements than anything we've seen before in any other sport up to this point. And finally, boxing. 14 months removed from the ring following recovery from a scary car crash, Earl Spence Jr. looked better than ever in a strong case for consideration as the best 147-pound fighter in the world. Spence, now 27-0, 21 Ks, made a successful defense of his welterweight titles with a thorough clinic as he knocked off former 2-division champion Danny Garcia with a unanimous decision. So now the fight that everybody wants to see, Terrence Crawford from Omaha, Nebraska, who, by the way, is a stud. Terrence Crawford, who's undefeated. They'd love to see Spence versus Crawford, and who wouldn't, for the belts in the weight class. So that'd be tremendous. Earl Spence coming back from that car crash. He almost lost his life. 14 months later, he is right there at the front of the boxing world with a very convincing win over Danny Garcia. Do you have something to add?
No.
Oh, I thought you raised your hand.
No, okay. I scratched my head.
Oh, you scratched it. Well, you raised your hand.
I did raise my hand to scratch my head.
Yeah, we're in class.
Hey, teacher.
Yeah, have something to say? Yeah, okay. So anyway, that's a wrap on what happened over the weekend. Any thoughts real quickly on K-State football I covered earlier? I mean, yikes. So much for that prediction of K-State. Texas ain't going to be motivated. K-State looked like they weren't motivated. Do you think... let's leave with this. I'm going to ask you this, because I said earlier, but I want to get your opinion. When I saw it, I watched the whole game, but especially in the second quarter, I saw it in the first quarter too. Second quarter wasn't very good, and I knew it wasn't going to go in the right direction. K-State's defense, the tackling I thought was atrocious, but I thought at times the effort wasn't there.
100%. They didn't even look like they were trying a lot of times on even trying to put a hand on somebody to make a tackle.
Yeah.
Like that's the worst I've seen them look under Klieman, without question.
No,
just
I agree.
Effort-wise. Usually they go out there and at least have some effort. They're not lackadaisical about what they're doing. But, man, it's like they got down early and just said, nah, we're not here for it today.
They gave up 10 yards a carry.
They get 10 yards of play regardless of what it was.
Right.
It was 10.
Bijan Robinson averaged 19 yards a carry.
Yeah, passing and rushing were exactly both 10.1 yards a carry. And I'm like, it's every play you're giving up a first down. And
that's a good recipe.
No. No, not at all.
K-State scored 31 points and had 448 yards. If I told you before the game on Saturday that K-State's going to score 31 points at 448 yards, you would have said?
They're in the game at the end. They might lose it by a touchdown, depending on what they did defensively.
Instead, they lost by 38.
Yeah.
You know, there have been a couple games this year that have been KU-like scores for K-State. 45-0 at Ames, 69-31. That was embarrassing. And I know it just seems like that OU win was like 3 years ago for K-State.
Yeah.
But it goes to show you quarterback play. We've talked about it before. It's quarterback play. Football is all about quarterback play, especially college and up, college and pro. It's all about quarterback play. And you look here, and it coincides. KU has no quarterbacks. They're 0-9. K-State had a solid quarterback. He gets hurt, and things go south after that because the next guy up is a true freshman. Plus, he didn't have much of an offseason. That made it even worse, yeah. Okay? Nebraska struggled early in the year. Why? Quarterback play. Now they've won. They won at Purdue. You know why? Because quarterback was great. He played well for once, yeah. Adrian Martinez. You look at why did the Broncos lose last night? To me, it was quarterback play. I mean, Drew Locke, if he's a great quarterback, should have let him down to score a touchdown. Had time. But at the same time, not a lot of time, but he doesn't make the boneheaded pick earlier in the game.
Yeah.
Quarterback play. Mahomes was better than Locke. Even Mahomes didn't have his best night. I mean, you see it in NFL a lot. Quarterback play, quarterback play. Typically, the team with the better quarterback typically wins. Not always. But quarterback play is just so, so important at so many levels. But in college, with the way the game is now and it's wide open, if you don't have a really good or great quarterback, you're going to be an average football team, yeah. if that.
Yeah, you're not going to line up every single game and just win just based on quarterback play, okay?
No.
But you need consistency at the position.
Yes.
And if you have a set guy that is your guy,
right,
it's always going to bode much better for you in the end.
Right.
And then if you've got an exceptional guy like Mahomes, then, yeah, you probably are going to be out like, okay, we can win every single game every time we, you know, strap him on and go out on the field.
Right.
I don't think you felt like that with Skylar Thompson, but you felt consistency there.
Right.
Okay. You felt like you could go out and be down 42-21 against Oklahoma and make
you could come back. Yeah. No, I agree with you. So it's important to find that quarterback. Perhaps Jake Rubley is that guy. Maybe Skylar Thompson will be back for a sixth year next year at K-State. For KU, I don't know what to say. Jalen Daniels isn't playing now. They went to Miles Kendrick because apparently they're trying to salvage one win this season. Is Daniels the future? Perhaps. I thought he was supposed to be. But until KU and, you know, and even K-State for that matter, if they want to get back to the level of playing for a Big 12 title game, which KU at one point in 2008, they were right there, remember, against Missouri. Mm-hmm. And K-State, of course, won it all in 2003 and was right there with Colin Klein a few times. Guess what? You got to have good quarterback play. K-State had it with L. Roberson in 03. They, of course, had it with Bishop in 98. Of course, they had it with Colin Klein. And Skylar Thompson's been solid. That's why you're able to pull off and play well at times, where you're able to pull off upsets to Oklahoma because Skylar Thompson played well. But you've got to have a guy that's really solid at the quarterback position to really accomplish something. And if you don't,
yes.
I don't care how great your defense is, especially in today's age where if you breathe on a wide receiver, it's a defensive pass interference. I just don't see where you go very far with an average quarterback or, hey, I got two quarterbacks, but I don't know who I'm going to start. That means you don't have any good ones.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.